I'm Mallory, and I'm just sitting in Pilsen waiting for a Tinder date. But you're listening to Outside the Loop Radio, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thanks, Mal. She's still waiting for that Tinder date. I hope that date shows up. Welcome to Outside the Loop. This is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am your host, Mike Steven. Happy to be with you this morning, this rainy Saturday morning. Broadcasting live from the Allstate Showcase studio on a very damp Michigan Avenue. What we do here on this show is take a look at local issues and topics that don't normally get mainstream media attention. And of course, you could check us out online. You can go to WGNRadio.com for past editions of this show. Also, OutsideTheLoopRadio.com. We've got one of those newfangled websites. We are on Facebook and on Twitter at Outside the Loop. And Andy Herman is the producer of this program. Andy's on vacation. He can't work too hard, so Elif Garris is here. Hi, Elif.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing well.
I know it's a long day, night for you. I don't know what to call it.
Long night.
Long night. Okay. You're here producing Matt's show. And up in the newsroom is not Steve Bertrand, because as you heard last week, Steve won't be doing this news shift anymore. Instead, Schwanee River. Dave Schwan in the house. Dave, how are you, man?
Oh, Schwanee River. Now, that I've heard that many times before, but you can just call me Schwanee.
Okay, I'll just call you Schwanee.
Schwanee River.
David,
good morning.
Great to see you. Great to work
you
with you.
You too,
now,
Mike.
Steve, like we said, Steve will not be doing the shift anymore because he's doing the news duties and the Wintrust business lunch Monday through Friday.
Correct.
Which is great for Steve. So what I've been texting him all morning. Like, Steve, you gotta wake up. You gotta
Steve,
listen.
Steve, where are you?
Come
you
on,
didn't
Steve.
Come in.
I got Schwan here. Where are you? Where are you? Well, we've got a lot to do on the show now. Dave, you probably have seen this story this week talking about the possibility of Metra shutting down next year. Did you see that?
I've seen a lot of things about Metra this week. But yeah.
I just want Metra to be okay.
Sure.
Think about how many people use Metra to ride into the city to go to work and then come home. And there's a possibility, now I don't think it'll get there, but there's a possibility, they're talking about it, that maybe Metra could shut down because now they have to install some new devices to prevent rail accidents, which is very important, and the fines are pretty steep, but also that new system is very expensive.
Expensive,
yeah.
Sure. They don't have the money.
And I'll tell you, I don't want anybody else to have to drive in Chicago, you know? I think we're not the greatest. In fact, there was a study that came out this year by Wallet Hub, which is a personal finance website, that says Chicago is one of the worst places to drive in the United
States. Yes, I did see that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I get it, right? And because we have all this construction that's going on. And, you know, when we built these expressways many years ago, we didn't think that we would need, I don't know, four lanes.
Everybody had one car.
Right.
Now people have three or more.
Right.
So, yeah, traffic has just, I don't know, tripled, quadrupled, and it's not just here. It's everywhere.
I agree. And there's certain parts along the expressway system you just want to say, what were you doing? Like Harlem on the Eisenhower going outbound when it shrinks down, you lose a lane?
Right, you lose a lane, like, there, sure.
Come on. What were you thinking? My point is that, and I'm very pro cycling. I've talked about cycling issues on Outside the Loop before in Chicago. And if you can get on your bike, if you can get on a Divvy bike, go for it. But here's the thing. If I'm in the car, I don't want to hurt you if you're on the bike. I had a couple experiences this week. I was driving in the Wicker Park area, and there are a lot of cyclists in that area. But when you weave in and out of traffic on your bike, that's extremely dangerous. I'm all for you riding your bike. God bless you. Go for it. But when you're cutting me off in the car, in the one-ton car, and you're on your bike, don't do that.
I very, very nearly had a catastrophe on my hands about 6 months ago, I guess. I was driving down State Street, South State Street. I was south of Roosevelt. In between, I guess this would be around 14th, 15th and State, somewhere around there. Little less traffic than there is, you know, north of Roosevelt Road. However, there was a man on a bike, and he was on my right, my immediate right.
Okay.
I saw him. He was just fine. But he decided to go left. in front of me.
Yeah.
And I really am glad that I saw him start to do this, because otherwise, as I say, I could have had a catastrophe in his hand. Then he realized that I was 6 feet in front of him, and he just waved like, oh, sorry, man. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought to myself, what are you thinking?
I know. I know. That's the thing. Like I said, I am pro cycling.
Sure.
You go for it. Get on your bikes. That's great. I love the Divvy program. Fantastic. But you got to use it responsibly. And also, I sound like I'm on my soapbox here. You've got to obey the traffic lights. When you go through a red light, it's just like a car going through that. You're going to get hit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Especially in the city.
I saw this twice within, you know, the span of like 2 days. And it freaked me out, because the cyclist, you know, if you're at a red light, they're coming up fast. And so you don't have a whole lot of time to react as a driver. The moral of the story is slow down. We all want to have the road together. In one piece, wouldn't that be nice?
Well, in one piece. That's the operative
phrase
there.
That's the key right there.
Yeah.
That's the key. Coming up later this hour, we have, so much to do on this edition of the show. And by the way, we're happy that you are here with us on this rainy Saturday morning. We talked to a local author who recently came up with a list of the best novels set in Chicago neighborhoods. Before that, have you heard of this stuff called Pet Coke? It's actually a toxic byproduct of petroleum processing, and you can find lots of this stuff in some Chicago neighborhoods. We'll get the story on that. But first, affordable housing is very important to have in the city in order to ensure that many Chicagoans have a chance to live here. There's some pushback, though, when it comes to new affordable housing rules. We'll find out what's going on. I'm Mike Steven. This is Outside the Loop. We'll take a quick break and be right back here on 720 WGN. WGN. This is Outside the Loop. I'm your host, Mike Steven. Good Saturday morning to you, broadcasting live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Right now, listening to the local tunes from the band Low Swans. You can check them out online, lowswans.com. That's lowswans.com. They have a show coming up this Friday, that's September 18th, at the House of Blues. Very cool. Again, lowswans.com. Each week, I love to feature your local music, so if you have any, you can send us some songs and we'll mention your upcoming gigs. This week, just spinning some tunes from the synthy rock of Low Swans. As Chicago continues to grow and evolve, affordable housing is an important issue for many residents here. The city has a low-income housing plan, but a lawsuit filed by the Home Builders Association of Greater Chicago is challenging that plan. Brenton Mock is a staff writer at CityLab.com. That is part of the Atlantic magazine looking at urban issues across the country. He wrote about Chicago developers pushing back against affordable housing rules. And he joins us this morning here on Outside the Loop to talk about what he wrote. Brenton, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
You are quite welcome. And this issue of affordable housing in Chicago, I think sometimes we hear about it discussed, but at the heart of this issue about what you write, the Affordable Requirements Ordinance, this essentially forces developers who are building housing projects of a certain size to provide low-income housing. And what's the issue here? That some of these developers are saying, wait a second, you can't tell me what to do and what to build? Is that at the heart of this?
The pushback that you're seeing in Chicago from developers is the kind of pushback that you're seeing from a lot of developers across in cities across the nation, where cities have been coming up with, have been trying to come up with ways to supplement their affordable housing supply. I mean, as we know, housing has been unaffordable for many low-income families. The supply of housing in general is low, but it's definitely so for those of low income. So cities like Chicago have been trying to come up with kind of novel ways of incentivizing developers to produce low-income housing for the city. In Chicago's case, they have an ordinance where a developer in producing new housing, if it's building an apartment building mm-hmm. that has more than 10 units, that at least 20% of those have to be affordable. Now, a developer can opt out of building that, including those affordable units in the housing development by contributing a certain fee to the city's affordable housing fund. And in Chicago's case, it's been $100,000 for that kind of opt-out fee. Under the new rules, the fees would increase. Those opt-out fees would increase for new apartment building developments that are being built in basically wealthier neighborhoods. It could be as much as $200,000. And basically, that's the city trying to incentivize the developers to go ahead and build those units. But what we're hearing from the developers is that they find this unconstitutional. They believe it's basically amounts to a takings, meaning the government is forcing a private enterprise to do something that it doesn't want to do to serve the government's purposes.
Right. So what do you make of that argument? So the developers are saying that, look, this is unconstitutional because the government is saying that, hey, look, we are telling you, the private developer, what to build. So this violates the Constitution. Do they have a point? Do they have an argument there?
I mean, in terms of whether they have whether this is constitutional or not. I mean, we're in largely uncharted territory in terms of having, cities kind of force private developers to create a certain kind of housing. And remember, these are developers that are not getting subsidies from the federal government. And usually where protections come in, fair housing protections or civil rights protections, they'll usually come in when you have a federal subsidy, like a housing subsidy that's in place. But with this, it's about private developers. And so, private developers are saying, like, wait a minute, you can't make us create this kind of housing, that we believe that we're going to take a hit on our profits for.
So if this is, let's just say this is unconstitutional and this isn't the right way to go about it, I mean, what are other cities doing? Because you mentioned this is going on in other cities, not just here in Chicago. So what do you do? Because you can't not put up affordable housing. You want people, you want a diverse population to live in this city, to be able to afford to live here in Chicago, not just the super wealthy or those with means. You want to have a city where people can afford to live, and so you need some affordable housing that goes up. But what we're seeing here in Chicago, and we have seen this over many, many years, is that they knock down old buildings and then they build up brand sparkly new ones and charge a whole lot of money. And it seems that not a lot of people can afford it. It happens in my neighborhood all the time. So what can we do if we're not going to require developers to put up affordable housing?
I mean, I think that's a good question. We have basically two options when it comes to supplying housing. I mean, we either get the federal government to subsidize housing that's affordable to low-income and moderate-income families, or we find some way to incentivize private developers to build more of it. Or and then there's the third way, you do both. I think private developers I'm not a developer, but I mean, mm-hmm. If I own my own company, I'd be looking out for my profits,
Sure.
And, if I made the set rents lower than what I think would clear a profit for me, then I would be concerned also. I think that, but I might also be short-sighted by thinking that way. We obviously need more people who can flourish and live productively in the city. If we can get more people into, housing, then it only expand. It should expand the economy for the entire city. Like, everyone should benefit. If you're thinking more long-sighted about that, but when it comes to private, any kind of private enterprise, we know that there's a lot of short-term thinking, and not every private developer has that kind of altruistic way of buying into things. They don't always believe that they need to help out with producing housing for the poor, which is an unfortunate and inconvenient fact, but it's a fact.
Yeah, we will see how this all plays out. And, it's interesting to talk about, and it's important to talk about because, developers, they have their bottom line. They have their businesses to worry about. We totally get that. But we would like to see, buildings that are affordable for other people to live in. So we have a diverse community here in Chicago because I really think that's what makes this city strong and unique, to be able to have this diversity of a population here in Chicago. So this issue is important, and you're writing about it at citylab.com. Brenton Mock is a staff writer at citylab.com. That's part of the Atlantic magazine, looking at urban issues across the country. Brenton wrote about Chicago developers pushing back against affordable housing rules, and this will undoubtedly continue. We'll keep an eye on it. Brenton, thanks so much for joining us here on Outside the Loop this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me on your show.
You got it. Mike Steven here with you on Outside the Loop. We'll take a short break and be right back here on 720 WGN. This is Outside the Loop right here on 720 WGN. I'm Mike Steven, your host. Good morning. If you're just waking up, it's a little rainy outside, but we're glad that you are here. Broadcasting live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Right now, listening to the local music from the band Low Swans. You can check them out online, lowswans.com. They have a show coming up this Friday at the House of Blues downtown, so that's very cool. This band's sort of a combination of rock and synth and some pop music. Each week, I love to feature your local tunes, so if you have any, you can just send us those songs, and I'll mention those gigs you have coming up this week. We're just hearing some tunes from the band Low Swans from right here in Chicago. Pet coke is a fine black carbon-based byproduct of petroleum processing. And when this stuff is airborne, it can really do some damage to your heart and your lungs. There is an issue with pet coke here in Chicago, and Jim Kinney is a member of the Coalition to Ban Pet Coke. He is a resident of the South Chicago neighborhood. He joins us this morning to talk about his fight against pet coke in Chicago. Jim, good morning. Nice to talk to you.
Nice talking to you, too. Thanks for the interest.
You are welcome. And I think this is something that maybe we have heard about in passing, this whole pet coke thing, or maybe some of us don't even know what's going on. So I mentioned what pet coke is. It's this black carbon stuff. It's a byproduct of petroleum processing. It's very dangerous. How big of a problem is pet coke in Chicago?
Well, on the southeast side, it is a big problem. I'm not sure how many acres it is, but it's in the millions of tons, and it's being stored on the banks of the Calumet River, and it's just a couple of hundred feet from the community. It's a dangerous product. I mean, they could say what they want, the KCBX, who are the Koch brothers, but basically this stuff gets into the air, gets into the community, and now people breathe it in, and you're talking asthma, lung cancer, problems with the heart, so it's not good.
No, it's not good. It's very dangerous. So are we talking about, like, pet coke just sitting outside in big hills? Like, you think of the big salt hills, that where the salt trucks go in the winter to get refilled. Is that what pet coke storage is like in the South Chicago neighborhood?
Yes, it is.
Wow.
Absolutely. That's it. There's big mounds. I think the mounds go as high as 30 foot, which is pretty big. I guess what they do is that they do put water on it, but they can only put so much water on it to suppress the dust. And And the water itself gets into the community too on a windy day. And that water is taken from reservoirs that have that are filled with pet coke. You know, so it's black, dirty water.
Mm-hmm.
It gets mixed with the dust, and it gets into the community.
What's this KCBX terminal that you guys talk about with the Coalition to Ban Pet Coke?
KCBX terminal is it's run by the Koch brothers. They got the contract to store petroleum coke in Chicago. That was done without any of the community really knowing anything about it, and it goes from the river all the way over to I think it's Green Bay Avenue or Burley. So it's they're storing a lot of pet coke there. I mean, we're talking millions of tons there.
And so the effects of pet coke, how have you seen that firsthand in your community of South Chicago?
The like I said, the dust on the homes, the effect it has on people, the asthma rates is higher probably in our area than any place else in the city. Yeah, I'm sure there's more lung cancer. It's a problem. As a matter of fact, when they had one of the big storms that they had, when this stuff was blown all in throughout the neighborhood, my brother-in-law was probably a couple of blocks away from the piles, and he came back into the house after working. He was cleaning the windows or doing something, but he comes back in and he's covered with this stuff. So, and he really didn't know what it was or what it was from.
What is the response from the city of Chicago? I mean, is the mayor saying anything? Is the city council saying anything? Anybody saying, hey, South Chicago, we understand there's pet coke there and it could be damaging?
We've had the mayor come down. We've had the congressman come down. We've had Congressman Kelly. We've had Senator Durbin come down. And they all addressed the issue, saying that they're going to do something about it. When the mayor came down, he said, well, you know, there's a possibility that we can enclose the piles, and you can't enclose all that. I mean, it's the area is too big and there's too much pet coke there.
Mm-hmm.
I think what they're trying to do is do a thing called a throughput. So what they do is that they'll bring the pet coke in on railroad cars, and their idea is to go ahead and put it directly out to barges or ships and then ship it out. And they think that's going to, you know, solve the problem. And we personally in down here, we don't want any pet coke. The stuff gets into the river. It still gets into the air. It's a filthy product. It never should be made, period. It's just a dirty product, and it's in a primarily a minority neighborhood, you know. So it's just wrong all the way around.
It seems like this is a big problem, and like you've been saying, nobody is really coming to the aid of you guys.
Yeah, you're right. It's we do have the attorney general we did file a lawsuit, and the attorney general is backing us up there. So we're not sure how that's going to turn out, but we're pretty much left out here without any support.
The website is petcokealerts.org. Again, petcokealerts.org. If you want more information on pet coke in Chicago, and this website actually shows the current wind conditions and the amount of pet coke that's blowing around, which I think can be quite shocking if you go to petcokealerts.org. But this is really something that we should be aware of. It's very toxic. It's here in our city. It's blowing around all over certain neighborhoods, especially South Chicago. And Jim Kinney is a member of the Coalition to Ban Pet Coke. Again, petcokealerts.org. Jim, thanks for talking to us this morning about this very important issue, because we might not know about it here in the city. We might have heard about it, and we're not quite sure what pet coke is, but it's a very real problem. And we'll stay in touch, and hopefully somebody comes to your aid and helps you out.
Well, thanks a lot for the interest. We're going to keep on fighting this issue. So,
absolutely. Keep fighting the good fight. Again, Jim Kinney from the Coalition to Ban Pet Coke. I'm Mike Steven. This is Outside the Loop. We'll take a quick break and be right back here on 720 WGN. Words
morning, 720 WGN. Mike Steven here with you on Outside the Loop. Mr. Fix-It Lou Manfredini coming up at 7 o'clock on location this morning from the Nary Remodeling Show. Right now, listening to some local music from the band Low Swans. LowSwans.com is their website. And these guys have a show at the House of Blues coming up Friday, this Friday, September 18th at 7 p.m.
A great thing about Chicago is that each neighborhood, I think, really tells a story. And now, thanks to local author Adam Morgan, we can actually see what some of the best novels that take place in our different neighborhoods are. Adam put together a list for GapersBlock.com. It's called Best Chicago Novels by Neighborhood. He joins us this morning to talk about what he wrote. Adam, welcome to Outside the Loop.
Thanks, Mike. Great to be here.
Well, it's nice to have you. And this list, so I think this is cool because you actually break this down by neighborhood and you feature certain books that take place in these neighborhoods. Tell us why you decided to do this, because I know you're not the first person to do this in the United States.
Correct. Yeah, it's been done before. And actually, the impetus for me writing the article was a couple weeks ago on August 13th, I think it was, the New York Public Library released their list of the best novels, the best novels by neighborhood in New York City. And I saw that on Twitter and thought it was a really cool idea and got kind of jealous because New York has all these great writers. But I knew Chicago had plenty of great writers of its own, so I decided I hit up my editor at Gaper's Block, Andrew Huff, and asked if he'd be interested in running it, and he said yes. So I just took a look at my bookshelf and did some research online and came up with this list.
Yeah, so this is a combination of books that you've read, books that you've researched, because when you say Best Chicago Novel by Neighborhood, you know, that's a pretty big title. So how did you go about finding the books for all of these neighborhoods that you list in your article?
Sure. So I will admit I have not read all of these. I've read maybe about half. And the rest, so I started with just sort of taking a look at what some other Chicago outlets had listed as the best Chicago novels. You know, Chicago Magazine had a list. The Reader had a list. The Tribune had something from a while back. So that sort of gave me, you know, a bunch to work with. And then I just tried to find out which ones could I pin down to specific locations. And some take place all over the city, so those were out. But some took place in very specific neighborhoods. So that gave me the list. And then, it was easier for some than others. Some, it was pretty easy, like The Lazarus Project by Heman. I had read that, so I knew it was in Lincoln Park. Mm-hmm. At least the part in the past took place in Lincoln Park. I knew that Chasing Vermeer was in Hyde Park. You know, everyone knows where The Jungle takes place. But some of them were a little more difficult. And so to do that, I would just, luckily with the internet today, you can pull up previews of books on Google Books. And so instead of having to trudge down to the library and spend hours wading through, I just did some searches and figured out where are these characters spending their time in the book.
And so when we talk about books being written in Chicago, that's one thing, because when we talk about Chicago, a lot of people think, okay, it's set in the downtown area. But when we talk about different neighborhoods and specific neighborhoods, are there a lot of books out there that are set in certain neighborhoods in Chicago?
There are, actually. They're more often than not, they're not just set sort of downtown in the Loop or in River North. A lot of times, it's even most of the most famous books by Chicago writers about Chicago, they might have scenes downtown, but most of them take place elsewhere. A lot of stuff on the north side and a lot of stuff on the south side as well. Believe me, this list is not even remotely exhaustive. We got lots of different suggestions in the comments. I got so many emails from people saying, what about this? You need to add this. I had to eventually just stop adding things because it would have been a, you know, a 60 book list.
That's right. Well, as it is right now, you cover a bunch of ground on the near south side, the west side. You've got the north side, of course, Little Village, Lincoln Park, Lakeview. Where else do you have? Uptown, Washington Park, Wicker Park. Of course, Nelson Algren when it comes to Wicker Parks. You got to put him in there, of course. But
you've got a fountain named after him. So.
That's right. That's right. So when we talk about books being set in Chicago, you said that there are a lot of those that are actually around. And I think, again, we might not think of that right away. But also, what about your local author? What about Chicago authors writing about Chicago? So it's one thing to not be from here and set your story or your characters in a certain neighborhood in Chicago. But what about the authors that are here right now or were here? Do we see a lot of those authors writing about these neighborhoods?
Yes, absolutely. You know, other than New York, Chicago has the most vibrant, I think, literary scene in the United States. And you can tell that writers who live here love the city because almost all of them write their fiction and their nonfiction about Chicago. Joe Mino, whose new book is not about Chicago, but it was just released last week, and he had a reading last night, up in Lincoln Square. Most of his books are about Chicago, either the West Town or the University of Chicago area, or some stuff downtown. He's one of the most well-known. Audrey Niffignager, who wrote The Time Traveler's Wife,
mm-hmm.
Is set all over Chicago, and she's still writing. She's got a new collection coming out. And we have lots of MFA Master of Fine Arts programs in the city where, students go to learn how to write fiction and nonfiction. And a lot of the professors there, like Joe Mino, like Scott Blackwood, like Kathleen Rooney, also publish, fiction and books about the city. And then it goes from every genre you can imagine. We have mystery writers like Laurie Rader Day, who write about Chicago. We have people like Alexander Heeman, who almost always sets his work here. And then we have, sci-fi like Wes Chu, or detective fiction like Miles Harvey. We've got everything.
So there is a lot that you can check out. If you want to read a book that is set in a Chicago neighborhood, you could go to the article, again, written by local author Adam Morgan. It's called Best Chicago Novels by Neighborhood. It's on gapersblock.com. We'll put a link up on the WGN Radio website and outsidetheloopradio.com because you did some work, and I think it's a pretty cool list. Lots of stories being set in various Chicago neighborhoods. I think it's cool, and it's really great to read these stories and have these characters come to life on the page and set right here in our neighborhoods. Again, Adam Morgan is a local author. You can check out his website. It's adammorganauthor.com. Adam, thanks so much for talking to us about the best Chicago novels by neighborhood this morning.
Thanks so much, Mike. It's been great.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. This is Outside the Loop. I'm Mike Steven. We'll take a quick break and be right back here on 720 WGN. Mike Steven here with you on Outside the Loop on 720 WGN, wrapping up the 465th edition of the show. And right now, sending it out to Oakbrook, right? Lou, are you there?
Yeah. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing great. You're at the Nary Remodeling Show.
We are the 2015 Luxury Home Remodeling Show presented by Nary of Greater Chicagoland. We're at the Hilton Chicago Oakbrook Hills Resort and Conference Center. And we're going to do the show this morning all the way to 10 o'clock. And then the conference, the seminars and everything start right at 10:15. This whole thing goes to 2 o'clock. You know what I was thinking about? This is a small show, Mike.
Okay.
You know, there's not like a ton of booths here, so I don't want people to think, like next week we're going to be, in 2 weeks we're going to be at the Old House, New House show, which is this huge, wonderful home show. This is like the Mini Cooper home show.
Okay.
Okay. High quality in a little bitty box.
And lose there. How about that?
Yeah,
sounds
right,
like you've got a good crowd.
We do. You had a great show. It sounded very good, and
thank
all these people
friend.
Were nodding. Doesn't everybody like Mike Steven and Outside the Loop?
Oh.
All these people can't sleep. They're all thumbs up here. Yeah.
I love you guys. Love you.
But, yeah, love you more.
Love your show.
Love your show.
Thanks, Lou. And thank you for listening to Outside the Loop. We'll talk to you again next time right here on 720 WGN.